Save big on everything for your next staining project when you shop at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture, and repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are talking episode 12, but in the past. John, how did you enjoy, dislike this episode of Survivor?
I quite enjoyed this episode of Survivor, actually. And I think this seems to be the general consensus. This episode honestly kind of turns around the season for me. We were getting to a point, obviously, over the last couple of weeks, but I've been a little disappointed in the last couple of episodes. Except for you, McKenna, last week you are maybe the only person in the entire Survivor universe who liked last week's episode more than the episode that preceded it.
Yes.
But I enjoyed this episode. It was different. It was different, and it was a needed different, and I really like that. It's something we're actually going to talk about a lot later on when we get to our Outlast, but it was a very unique way of approaching an episode that we don't usually see Survivor deviate from a particular type of storytelling. So I was really excited to watch it, and it played out really well. What did you think of it?
I thought it was good. I mean, I feel like my level for good episodes right now is kind of a little wonky because this season's a little wonky. And I think I am also, I feel like on, I wouldn't say the wrong side, but I'd also say maybe the casuals side of I want Eva and Joe to win. Eva has been my winner pick since day one. And then her bond with Joe made me really like Joe. Plus some of the things like Phil was saying in the cast assessment about Joe kind of got me on the Joe train. So I just think I was like coming in with biases, and now that they're still in the game, I want them to win. But I also feel like that's like not the common opinion from like people who are really analyzing the game. They're wanting a Kyle win. So,
yeah, I think it definitely seems like a lot of people are pulling for that Kyle or Camilla win at this point. Obviously, we're seeing, unless you're talking about Blake, 100%. Right. I don't know if you saw the comment from earlier today on Digging Deeper, but Blake will probably still say Joe's going to win when Kyle does win the game. Mm-hmm. But most from what I'm seeing are really hoping for that Kyle or Camilla win. I think there are still a large portion of the viewing audience though who are rooting for Joe. And I think it's kind of hard to root against him after last week's episode. Yes, we're kind of in a point where did he make the unequivocal wrong decision? Maybe. I mean, we have to wait and see how it plays out in the finale for him. But we do know he was duped. And that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. But the personal content we got from Joe, which is something he had shared earlier on in the season too. Like, everyone on the season knew about Joe's story from day dot. Because he shared it with them right away. And I mean, he has the bracelet for abuse survivors and everything on his wrist and everything like that. So he has it. But it was a very compelling moment. So much so that I was even moved to message Joe on social media because of how much I felt a connection to him in that moment as he's talking about, you know, the last phone call he had with his sister. It was a very human moment. And that's what I think this season really has come down to, are these human moments. Obviously, we had the big moment between him and Eva in episode 4. And we kind of lost it a bit in the middle as the game got a little monotonous there. But it was nice kind of returning to those human moments, because I think that's where a lot of the spirit of season 48 really comes from.
Yeah, yeah. This is definitely a more like human focused and like interaction focused season, for sure. All right, so Outwit, let's talk about it. And we are talking about waiting to make your move. Ever since the swap, Joe, Camilla and Kyle got the ick from Shaheen. And they didn't want to do anything just yet. And so they bided, waited their time. And then this was the time to strike to get him out. And off he went to the jury. So we're going to talk about a few moments where people kind of simmered and like let, you know, time pass and then nailed him.
This was really interesting to me, McKenna, because when you brought it up, as we were kind of discussing where we wanted to go with this podcast, it almost is this bit of an afterthought on the episode when Kyle mentions this moment mm-hmm. where Shaheen went through his bag back on the Swap Tribe. And you kind of forgot that was there and has kind of been like just fermenting underneath mm-hmm. the surface for a long time. And we've seen, obviously, Kyle and Camilla kind of try to shift blame onto Shaheen a few times here throughout the merge, but it never really felt like we were getting to a point where it felt like there was this desire for vengeance. So do you feel there are points in this season that kind of highlighted this idea that this was something percolating that was eventually going to come to a head?
I mean, yeah, all the thoughts of like, do we pitch Shaheen? Who do we pitch Shaheen to? And there was kind of a little bit of an uprising when, you know, Star was around, when Mary was around. So he kind of always was floating as an option, but it was never the right time. And now they finally got the dig for Joe because, you know, Eva wasn't safe and they had the reward and they were just finally with the small enough numbers able to spin this half truth.
Yeah. I agree. And it's very interesting because I think one of the biggest points that Kyle makes through this is it actually kind of sucks that Joe wins immunity here, because he's not in that paranoid state that we saw last episode when he doesn't win immunity.
Right.
But what's really interesting about this entire situation to me is this idea that I think you're right. It was kind of laid out for us. There were moments where there was the, you know, sowing the seeds of Shaheen's demise. But this really felt like Kyle and Camilla being like, this is the way Kyle phrased it, right? Like, one of us gets to the end if we do this now. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that aspect of it? Like, is Shaheen really the only way Kyle and Camilla guarantee one of them sits at the end of the game?
Well, we saw Shaheen called Joe his number one. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Joe's number one is Eva. But if then they're a tight three, then there's one final one, two, and three. Mm-hmm. They guaranteed opened up a spot in the final three. Whether it is one of them it remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. But if they're betting on like original tribes or, you know, other alliances, Joe swapped with Shaheen and Kyle, but had the OG tribe with him as well. So there's more of a history with Shaheen. So I can see why taking him out here, it really just breaks open a spot for one of them.
Yeah, I see that, especially with when you consider like the other person in the game left is Mitch. And I assume the presumption here with Kyle is that he is that three then. So he can dictate that Mitch goes at five. I think it's kind of what everyone mm-hmm. assumes is happening at five, unless Mitch wins immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. What is an example that reminds you of this like long-seated revenge that we get from Kyle here?
Well, I mean, we have to go to San Juan del Sur. We have Natalie and John Mish with getting Jeremy out. John and Jacqueline are this power couple that are in the sway of kind of every vote. They've been dictating or putting their votes to give the majority for a lot of the merge. And that is a known duo. And so they cut off, or Natalie cut off one of the people from the duo that is kind of just more strong-willed. Not that Jacqueline's not strong-willed, but Jacqueline was easier to work with for Natalie. As we see what happens at the final four. Or not final four.
Five.
Yeah. Math. And so cutting John here and having it be that like revenge for Jeremy is kind of one really obvious moment in Survivor history.
I think the bigger one with this example from San Juan del Sur, I think this is a big one, but I think the big difference between San Juan del Sur and 48 in this instance is we got confessionals from Natalie about this every single episode. Mm-hmm. This idea of like, I'm waiting my time, I'm biding it. I'm just waiting until it's the perfect moment. John is still a number for me. He's still helping me. He's still working with me. And there is a high likelihood if John and Jacqueline don't work with Natalie as closely as they end up working with her throughout this season, mm-hmm. John's gone a lot earlier in the season.
Right.
Because Natalie doesn't need to bide her time. But she's given the opportunity to do so because John is kind of in this middle position and she's able to finagle it, right? Like, this is
she
also
tells him to play the idol. Like, she's become a trusted confidant.
Mm-hmm. And this is also the episode right after she, like, messes up the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So she's already in control of the game there. She's taken that moment. And now is the time where it's like, okay, I don't need John anymore because I have taken control away from him completely.
Yeah. And just like that specific move is one of my favorite all-time moves. And then following it, you get John out of the game. It's just like a sucker punch of a 1-2 episode for Natalie. And that's really kind of where you see this arc. So we could see something here for Kyle moving forward with, all right, he took out kind of, not that Joe's not his big bad, but like his, one of his, I don't know the best word for it, but like one of his like goals or whatever. One of his goals is get out Shane, and he did that. And so now he can move on and go to the next step of Joe, of Eva, of whoever.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I noted on this episode was the way that Kyle was phrasing him and Shaheen and how he very much viewed themselves as equals, mm-hmm. waiting together, right? And who's going to make the first move? And he has to make the move before Shaheen makes the move, but he can't make it too early because then it puts a target on himself. We kind of saw that narrative over the last couple of weeks, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we're really going with, and that's where the storytelling is coming from. It's like you said, Joe's kind of a big bad because that's kind of who people perceive can win the game. But ultimately, I think Kyle is more concerned that his game and Shaheen's game were too similar.
Yeah, because Joe's game is Joe's game. And then you have Kyle and Shaheen kind of waiting in the wings to like tell everything that they have done at Final Tribal Council. And they both have not secret games, but like hidden moves that they would bring to Tribal Council, and not saying that they have the same moves either, but like that strategy of like hiding some moves and revealing it, it's less impactful when you have someone else there who is doing the same thing.
And I think that's really where it differs from San Juan del Sur, because Natalie was never concerned that
Natalie's revenge.
Natalie's like straight revenge. And that's what made it so entertaining in the moment. And still on a rewatch now, right? It's so entertaining and satisfying to see the end of that story arc that we get in San Juan del Sur, starting with essentially the merge leading up into Jeremy's vote out and then the demise of John into Natalie's win. It's so satisfying because of the way the edit did it. And maybe this moment this week, while again, this episode was quite satisfying, it could have been more satisfying as a season arc, mm-hmm. if it was built up just that little bit more, that tension between Kyle and Shaheen playing those similar games.
Yeah. And it's great to tie into our next moment that we want to talk about, which is the Penner boot in Cook Islands. And that is coincidentally the episode we were watching over on the Patreon. So please watch that so you can listen to us tomorrow. And so Penner, he does the big flip from I2, the mutiny to Raro, then is with the Raro people. And then once Yule shows Penner the idol, he flips back to I2. So Raro is burned from Penner. I2 is burned from Penner. And Yule is still like not happy working with Jonathan, but they still needed his number. So they had to bide their time and wait until Candace was still in, Candace was in the game. They brought up the, hey, if you vote out Penner, we'll give you our jury votes. They were like, well, we can't really do this right now. We're getting rid of Candace. So there is a bigger number difference. So now Adam and Parvati are really like, Yule, you really got to get rid of Penner. And he's like, still hemming and hawing of, should I do it? Because we would have solid, solid numbers, and Adam is winning immunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's very interesting because there is that strategic decision there. And it left, I would say, from the Yule side of things, less vengeance here. Mm-hmm. But from the Adam and Parvati side of things, total vengeance. They are just at the point where it's like, get Petter out of here before we are. That's all we care about at this point.
Yeah, and Yule is doing it in a strategic way because they're like, do you want our jury votes? Like, we know we're heading there. So, like, we're not going to mince words here. Do you want them or not? Vote him out first. He just has to go before us, and I will respect you more as a person. And I'm like, I forgot. Well, I didn't really forget, but, like, I was reminded of in this episode, the rat, the cancer mm-hmm. that Jonathan gets called during the season.
Yeah, there's a lot of vitriol towards Jonathan at this point in the game. He's getting it from the Raros, and I2
aren't very, really, but they're like, he doesn't have really a home.
Good at, yeah, they're good at holding their resentment back, but you still see it throughout that episode where Becky and Sandra essentially just ignore Jonathan for most of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just aren't willing to talk to him at all. So it's interesting because it very much feels like Jonathan is in this spot where he's definitely on the bottom, but people mm-hmm. have, like, used him to that point, which is kind of, like, what we're seeing with Shaheen, right? Like, Shaheen was a useful number for Kyle. He was going with the same flow, obviously, with this alliance and everything. And the fact that he had that secret alliance with Camilla, which somehow they still obscured through this episode because Camilla just, you know, put the vote on Mitch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it still, like, seemed like Camilla and I'm fascinated to see in the finale if anyone has pegged Camilla and Kyle as being a duo at all. But because of that, Kyle's given the liberty to use Penner as a number. Yule obviously has this liberty because he essentially assured Jonathan had nowhere else to go by flipping him, by showing him the idol.
Mm-hmm.
By showing him the idol, he could be like, hey, first off, I have all this power. Like, you can't get us out.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. But more importantly, by forcing the flip there, he burns Penner from the other side to the mm-hmm. point where we do get this vengeance storyline.
Yeah.
That is honestly really uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. We will definitely get more into this whole scene over on the Patreon. So watch season 13, episode 13, Arranging a Hit. John, are you ready to go into our outplay portion of the game?
I am. And you know what, McKenna? We're getting to a point where in the new era, it's really hard to make comparisons to our outplays. But...
because obstacle course, hey, viewers, let us know if you want us to talk about all these challenges with monkey fists or with crawling under a net, because this is kind of what the new era is doing to us. But we do have a solution because we are creative individuals.
We do. But before we get into that, I have to shout out Survivor Fact Checker, who has pointed out the winner of the loved ones letters in the new era has not won the game. It's the new car curse.
I'm excited because once I found out about the car curse, it was like, I didn't want to look up spoilers when I was watching for the first time, but I heard about this car curse and that whoever wins the car doesn't win the game. And it's like, ooh, like now I have a little insider information, a little spoiler, but not for the full like storyline of it all. So like something like Cindy in Guatemala with the car being like, all right, Jeff is like, there's been a curse. Do you want to break it? And Cindy's like, no, I want the car. Like, it makes it so much of a sweeter moment.
And again, it's probably just coincidence is what it really comes down to. Or some, like, karmic justice brought on by the survivor gods. Karmic, yeah. Yeah, emphasis on the car. But it's interesting that the new era has this new curse. Like, something that we haven't been able to hearken back on for a while. I'm very interested to see. Survivor Fact Checker said they were going to accumulate more data from all of Survivor. So I'm excited to see where it goes. When we finally have a chance to look over that, and thank you for making our job easier. But yes. Not where we're going with this one, although no. We are going to talk about these loved one letters.
Yes, we are, because this is our loved one visit in the new era, is Jeff announcing we also have loved one letters. So we're going to talk about obvious loved one picks, because if you are not Joe and Kyle, it's going to be hard to not pick Joe or Kyle. Now, we have talked about like people not doing that in Cat with One World, but I feel like if I say what is one of the most obvious choices for a loved one visit, does your brain not automatically go to Shane in Boston?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, obviously in Panama. The Cathaya Six are such a fascinating group of people, and just like the end game of that entire season is so fascinating. And to see, you know, Shane just break down when Boston gets there, and you know
the Boston tattoo on his pec,
exactly,
and, well, by his heart,
and just, you know, how much communication he's been, how much he's been talking about Boston throughout the entire season, how much it's very clear that like Boston matters to him more than anything in the entire world. And also the first time a child has been on Survivor.
Yeah.
so kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah.
And seeing that, like, I don't know how you could possibly win that and not be like, yes, okay, Boston, Shane, yeah, we're going to give you that. Because, like, this isn't it. And I think also just as an outside observer, as someone like that, like, yes, okay, you get a you've won the loved one's visit. You get to share it with your loved one at that point, and you get to choose other people to share it with as well. This is such a pivotal moment for a child. Like, I just feel like having a child there is so much easier to choose than someone else. Like,
yeah, it's like, hey, kid, you can't see your parent. Like, that would have been crazy.
Yeah, it's like, hey, do you want this formative memory being, hey, stranger, this stranger prevented me from seeing my dad as he was gone for a month.
That would have been absolutely wild. And also, we have to remember with Panama, it's actually one of my favorite ways that they did a loved one visit, with the degrees of love, which Terry wins. So him and his wife go on the like away vacation of it all with Shane in Boston, but then he has to send someone to exile, give a hug, spend the night at camp. So like that's a fun way to give, well, except for the exile part, varying degrees of love, and instead of just like all or nothing.
Absolutely. And again, like obviously in 48, based on everything we know about this cast, I think Joe is a shoo-in to get this no matter what. I'm sure that's why he was totally okay. Just like, I look like he just gave up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of looked like after Eva went down, he was like, yeah, cool, I'm done.
I had to show that I was like doing this challenge so no one thought it was sus if I like dropped first.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that.
Speaking of the loved ones of it all.
Yeah.
Like, is the strategy. And we also see this situation very, in my eyes, very similar to here in Edge of Extinction. Ron Clark wins this loved one visit, and he picks Gavin, who is newly married, and Julie, who is his number one alliance. So Shaheen picks Joe, Julie, and Kyle, Gavin.
Yeah, and obviously, like, Kyle and Gavin were in opposite situations, whereas Kyle's about to get married after the show, and Gavin just got married.
Then he had moved to go the wedding on the show. Up, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, like moved the wedding up and then didn't get to spend any time with his wife.
Yeah.
But that is another situation. And this is why I miss the loved ones visit. I think there's a little bit of torture with the loved ones visit,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, where... Sick,
twisted mind.
Of yeah, yours. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to give you this taste of love here. Go see the loved ones. Get a hug. Wave at them. You can talk to them briefly. Mm-hmm. You don't get to touch them. I mean, we've seen all sorts of degrees when it comes to the loved ones visit. But it's that, like you said, right? And we've discussed previously on the podcast many times, that idea of like having to pick the winners of a loved ones visit is so hard and so devastating. I mean, we look what they did to Brenda in Caramon, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, pick someone. Obviously, it's Dawn. And it's like, okay, cool. Now you can give everyone else their loved ones and you don't get yours.
And a second loved one on top of it. Not just one, but two.
And it's just, Survivor's done some very sadistic things with loved ones. And because we don't have a loved ones visit anymore, I think the only real loved ones visit that feels very genuine is the Winners at War one, because that was very much like the production celebration of all these winners.
Yeah.
But because we've moved away from loved ones visits and we moved to letters, it's been replaced by letters. And I don't think anyone who hasn't been away from their family for an entire month without the means of communication, which I have to imagine, I know myself and you, McKenna, I imagine most of our listeners have the means of communicating with the family members they want to communicate with at any time in today's day and age.
Yeah.
And if not, like, I don't know, maybe it's a phone call a week or phone call home, like to your parents once a week or whatever it is, right? That's there. The option's there. Yeah. It's when that option's taken away and you just want to hear anything from them.
It would be interesting if Survivor picked back up the degrees of love and did so. For me, letters would be top tier because I can take those and reread them and like kind of consume the love. Then the next tier, maybe a video from home. We bring back the loved ones videos. And then like a phone call could also, but because then that's like a one and done, or put the phone call above the video because it's like you can actually talk to them. Something like that where it's easier to do in the new era. I don't know. It could be interesting to bring back like that tier system of how do you allocate this love.
Okay, I have the solution.
Bring the people back.
We gotta IM them. Just like we did in Australian Outback. Bring back the instant messenger.
John, no. And you know what? If I get on the island and I'm IMing someone, I'm going to choose you
and call
you Carrots ask you if you'll marry me.
Yeah. Of course I will, please. Of course I will.
And I'll already be married.
Yeah.
So there's that. All right. So I don't, these loved one letters, it just, I'm looking at it now as the family visit, but I feel like having some of these other, seeing some of these other family visits, it's interesting. It provides a different dynamic of like Gavin's wife just like staring at you being like, pick me, versus some like one of your tribe mates being like, pick me. Having the other people on the island gives that kind of sick and twisted.
Yeah, it's a little torturous. I'm not going to lie. It is a little sadistic that producers have been doing this for so long and we let them get away with it. Because all of us are just suckers and cry every time we see loved ones show up on an island.
All right. You ready to cruise on over to Outlast?
I am. And I'm going to take the lead on this one here because this is what I think made this episode so compelling to me. And with our Outlast, we're talking about episodes kind of focused on a single person. And this episode, and I think this is why kind of a lot of the fandom has been saying, oh, this was Joe's winner episode. And then you had the people who are opposing it being like, no, this is Kyle's winner episode. Because a lot of this episode was focused on Joe. Mm-hmm. We had the very emotional moments with Joe early on in the episode, leading into a very uniquely edited second half of this episode, where instead of focusing on the parties kind of deciding who they're going to vote for and giving us this idea of like, okay, it's between this person and this. It's like, what? Last week, where it's like, oh, it'll either be Joe or Mary, or the week before, where it's like, is it going to be Mary or Star, right? That's how most episodes of Survivor are framed. It's two opposing groups deciding who they're going to vote for. Maybe a third idea comes up, or, you know, there's a blind side somewhere that we don't see quite coming, and it's kind of edited in that way. What we don't normally see is an episode of Survivor that is edited in a way where we are focusing on a single person's perspective and how they are processing information. Yes, I'm not saying that this entire episode is void of other people's opinions. Obviously, we see conversations with mm-hmm. Kyle and Camilla and Kyle and Shaheen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess Mitch is in this episode too somewhere. But a large portion of the back half of this episode is focused on Joe and this idea of like, who's lying to me?
Mm-hmm.
That was so fascinating to me. It's a very different type of storytelling. And because it was very character-focused storytelling that was reinforced by those personal moments we got earlier on in the episode, it really felt like a new form of editing for Survivor. And I'm going back to praising the editors once again. After kind of taking a dump on them the last 2 weeks, I'm ready to say, okay, Survivor editors, you got me. I have to give you your kudos again.
They have never really touched Tribal Council in terms of editing. Like, they've... Mm-hmm. done some weird things with challenges. They've done, you know, some newer things with confessionals and camp life and things like that, but they've never really touched Tribal Council. And to kind of be inside of Joe's head in Tribal Council was kind of really interesting to like be a part of. We definitely just like, I could picture myself, you know, looking through Joe's eyes and being like, is Kyle lying to me? Is what he's saying the truth? And the Shaheen, is Shaheen lying to me? Is it, or does he have the truth as like Tribal Council is rambling on? Because as we know, it's like 3 hours.
So the real interesting thing about this is we also know most of what's said at Tribal Council is kind of bullshit.
Right? Yeah.
People not, so the fact that the editors are taking the moment to be like, it doesn't matter what Kyle's saying here. It doesn't matter what Shaheen's saying here. All that matters is kind of like what's happening with Joe. And when it first happened with Kyle, I'm like, okay, this is a little weird. Like, mm-hmm. what's going on here? We're like focusing on Joe. Are we supposed to get the impression that Joe's really intently focusing on what Kyle's saying, or he's mm-hmm. thinking beyond what Kyle's saying? But then you get that moment and then it switches to the same thing as Shaheen speaking. And it's like, oh, this is actually brilliant, because it's telling us the character that matters this episode is Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean, and I think this is, I think that's why a lot of people are conflating it with a winner's edit for Joe, because it's the penultimate episode of Survivor. It's focusing on Joe. That has to be generally positive, right? But it's possible to have a self-contained story arc within a single episode of television. And I think we forget about that sometimes in reality TV, because we don't see it a lot in reality TV.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing that we wanted to talk about is South Pacific, the merge, where Cochran is kind of in this position that Joe is in, where he is like, which side do I choose? I know I'm supposed to be this double agent and tell Savai everything that Apolu's doing, but I kind of really want to go with Apolu because they're being nice to me and Savai is not. So like, I'm being pushed and pulled in these two directions, but where does my heart actually lie?
And that's the interesting thing with this episode when we compare it, is it's very focused on Cochran. It's focused on Cochran, who we've spent a lot of time with the entire season up to that point. We've seen how Savaii is approaching and really belittling Cochran the entire time. But we also see he's a kind of his loyal player. He wants to be loyal. And then we have Apolu come in and be very welcoming to him. It makes it so that instead of framing it in a way where it's like, okay, here's these two sides, here's who they're going after, like it almost becomes inconsequential who the targets are in this episode, right? It becomes inconsequential that Jim is being targeted on Savaii. I don't even remember. Who is the target on Apolu? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Apolu, is it Albert or Sophie?
Exactly. But that's kind of my point, right? Like a lot of the times you can... When you think about a big episode like this, you would be able to say it immediately, but you can't hear because it doesn't matter. All that matters is what is Cochran's decision?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we don't recognize when Survivor takes risks with edits like this enough. And it's very similar. Like we kind of get it again a few seasons later.
Keith and Rick.
Yeah, there you go. So completely different, right? I can't even think about who it is, but
because we're not focused on who's going home, we're focused on which side is Cochran joining,
right? And which is completely different than when it happens a few seasons later in Kageyan, where yes, we get Sarah in the middle, which way is Sarah gonna go? It becomes this idea of like, okay, but are they going to successfully navigate where everyone's going and mm-hmm. play their idols correctly and things like that, right? Where it's like, okay, are the votes going on, is the new group formed of, there's just too many people. I don't really know how to classify that.
The swap tribes? Are you talking Kageyan or South Pacific?
I am talking Kageyan right now. It is the swap tribes. And it's like, are we putting the votes on Sarah? Are we putting it on someone else? And it's like, where are they putting their votes? On Tony or LJ? And it's like, it's a Jeffra. But again, that's the difference between that Kageyan merge and the South Pacific merge. The Kageyan merge, you can name everyone who gets a vote in that episode. You can name who plays idols for who. Like, there's so much more to that episode than just the decision that Sarah's making. But in this Cochran episode, it's so Cochran-focused that the only thing that matters is, does Cochran
went with Apolu.
Savaii or Apolu?
Yeah. Which is, like, I really like kind of comparing it with this episode of, like, does Joe go with Kyle, which kind of feels Apolu? Because it's that he's newer, he's giving new information, or does he go with Savaii, which is Shaheen, which is the comfortable, the I know these snakes, you know? So, and both of them choose to go with the new information.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting also because of the way that they approach it too. Because one thing that I noticed, and I don't know if you picked up on this in the episode, when Joe talks to Camilla, he almost like gives her leading information to what he wants to hear, mm-hmm. but he's not like that at all in the conversation that we see he has with Shaheen.
Yeah, he's very like stone and stoic with Shaheen.
You have to tell me this thing, that this rumor that I heard, that it might not even be real.
Yeah, exactly. We also have a different moment that we wanted to talk about as well, and this is relating to not necessarily the sides, the vote, the decision. It's the kind of getting in someone's head of it all. And one of the most famous episodes of Survivor, we're going with the martyr approach, how we really get in Joe, how we really get in Coach's head and what he is thinking, going into exile, doing the honorable thing, and then with the challenge and, you know, honor, integrity, and all that. So, John, take it away.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think I'm honestly kind of shocked it took us this long to compare Joe and Coach in an episode. Everyone else on the internet has been for a while.
Oh.
Just a lot of people for the last couple of weeks have been saying Joe might take the Coach approach.
The honor, integrity, loyalty.
Honor, integrity when it comes to Final Tribal Council.
I thought we were talking character, and I was like, whoa.
No, not character. No, of course not character. Very different characters, obviously. But the other thing that the martyr approach does that's very similar to this, it kind of has a self-contained story arc within the episode, where it's like, yes, we've obviously built up Coach as this character the entire time, but we haven't spent this much time with us. I don't think up until the martyr approach, I don't think we have spent this much time with a single character mm-hmm. in any singular episode of Survivor.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, maybe.
Because I was trying to think of certain episodes, and they're not, like, fully revolving around one person. They have, like, sure, we have some, you know, side quests here and there in this episode, but it all comes down to Joe, where, like, in some other episodes, like, you know, this Cook Islands one, it comes down to a group of people, a group thing. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, Yule might be the kingpin, it's still, he's talking to his people. There, it's not just like, we know Eva's going to follow whatever Joe is thinking. And so what is Joe thinking?
Yeah, and I think I'm actually really glad you brought up Yule here, because a lot of the times when we do get these, like, single character focused episodes in Survivor, it tends to be a winner, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is also why when we see an episode focused on Joe, people are jumping to, oh, this is Joe's winner at it. Because a lot of the time when we get these very character-centric episodes, you think of, like the Spy Shack episode in Kageyama, right? Like, that's a very Tony-centric episode. Or, like, This is Extortion, another very Tony-centric episode that really, in retrospect, is very clear for their winner's edit. And I think we've been misled before, too, obviously, with, like, Samoa, where it's just the Russell Hant show the entire time, and that's his downfall.
No, this is The Specialist.
Yes. Yes. But with the martyr approach, because it is capped off with Coach's ouster from the game, it's so self-contained, and it is such a risky storytelling technique that clearly paid off, because it is often considered maybe the best episode of Survivor, if not, like, top three all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Not saying that this is top three or top four of all time. but it is, like, interesting, because it can backfire when, you know, you do focus too much on one person. And because we've gotten a lot of Joe content, I think this episode kind of falls by the wayside a little bit, because we've gotten so much of Joe. And if we had gotten a little less and a little bit more of other people, and then now we have this kind of Joe-centric episode, it, I think, would have hit a little bit harder.
I think the interesting thing about this, and I'm just double-checking here, but I'm pretty sure Joe doesn't even have the most confessionals. He's actually out of the top three for confessionals on the
show. I know, but it's still, like, because he's winning immunities, and we had these last two episodes that were very Joe focused in the talk from everybody else. It just feels like we have gotten a lot of Joe because he's in the four. You know, if all of a sudden this episode was Mitch, this episode is standing out and, like, kind of blowing out the water, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, I would be a little, like, where did this come from all of a sudden if it was Mitch?
But no, I know, but, like,
I understand what you're saying, like, from a
story. Or Camilla, or, yeah, you know, if we're getting, you know, kind of, like, the outside the four.
Yeah, I agree. Because despite the fact that Joe does have such a low confessional count compared to Kyle, Eva, and Camilla, Joe's obviously, like, the episode Joe didn't have a confessional in was episode four, where he had, like, one of the biggest moments in the new era.
Yeah.
And all of Survivor, potentially. Like, it's just, like, we've seen so much Joe despite that.
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly.
And which is why, also, when you compare it to the martyr approach, like, that's, again, where I think that comparison comes with Joe and Coach, because you've seen so much Coach up to that point in the season. And then you get this full episode about him, and it's capped off with his leaving the game. So I'm very interested to see what happens with Joe in the finale this week.
100, well, next week.
This coming week.
There you go. Well, that is our show, everyone. So please watch Cook Islands Season 13, Episode 13, Arranging a Hit for tomorrow over on Patreon. And we got a bunch of things going on. I'm going to steal your spotlight for just a second. Kyla and I just went live, like 44 minutes ago with the Amazing Race finale. So we have completed that. We ran all of the legs together. It was exhausting, but a great time. Check that video out if you haven't. And we will also be back in the fall with the next season of the Amazing Race. So the specialists are still keeping the Amazing Race continuing on. And I'm very happy about it. John, what do we got going on?
It's a busy week over here at the specialists. Obviously, we had Phil and Will take down the episode recap for this penultimate episode over on Wednesday. The schedule was a little changed this week. Phil was joined by the one and only Tommy Smokes from Barstool on Thursday for the final predictions of power rankings of the season. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, make sure you do. Phil and Blake earlier today talked about, they dug deeper going into the finale. Blake still doubling down on the fact that he thinks Joe is winning this season. There's no shot anyone else has. So make sure you go listen to that as well. Some interesting conversation. It's mostly just Blake being like, I can't believe all of you guys think Joe isn't winning. if you didn't know already, TechWith is now a specialist, and her and Phil did a fantastic episode on last Sunday, kind of predicting the cast for Survivor 50, which also introduced a game you can play and sign up for. You have until this Sunday, May 18th, to get in your answers for who you think the cast of Survivor 50 is going to be. So make sure you head over to that video, click the link so you can get your submission. There's only one submission per person. Phil will know. and then it's finale week. I can't believe we're already here, McKenna, but we are at finale week. Phil and Will be recapping the episode on Wednesday afterwards. There's another digging deeper next week as well. McKenna and I will be back on Thursday next week.
We gotta give that content early for the finale. Yeah. We know you want it right away. Friday? Come on now.
We know you want it right away, so we will get that finale rewind to you Thursday evening over on the Patreon. There's us. There's Phil and I talking Mission Impossible all month long in anticipation for next week's release of Dead Reckoning, or The Final Reckoning. Then you have they're wrapping up Token Genes on Every Season Matters, moving on into Samoa now. Phil's still finishing off Survivor Blood or Australian Survivor Blood versus Water, and everything else happening on the Patreon. It's where you want to be, even going into the off season. I know it's the off season. We still will have so much Patreon content coming your way, so make sure you check that out. Thank you, everyone, and we will see you all next week.
Goodbye, everyone.